I want folks to feel like when van lifers roll into town that it's good for business. I mean, I'm just a firm believer in the working man, working class. Like, give me a Miller, ice cold Miller High Life and a shot of Fernet.
All right, we have to kill this podcast right now and just end it right there.
Welcome to the Craft Beer Travel and Adventure Podcast with Living a Stout Life. This is where we sit down with creative thinkers, on-the-road adventurers, and craft beer lovers. Your hosts, Ken and April, live, work, and travel in a 24-foot RV in search of inspiring stories around a great beer. Hey, we just got back from trivia. I have a trivia question for you, and maybe you'll do better at this trivia question than we did at actual trivia that we just got back from, because that was fun, but
you don't like being in... We weren't?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Damn it. I wanted to be the best at something, like at least the best worst.
Well, that's the best worst beer, which was just mentioned on the clip from Josiah, whom we are going to be talking to in this episode. But actually, that's the trivia I was going to ask you. You want some trivia?
Yes.
Do you know who the Times Person of the Year was in 2006?
I don't know, but I feel like you are going to tell me something about it.
I think it might have been our guest, Josiah. At least on his bio, I read it somewhere. It said he was the Times Person of the Year 2006. Yeah. That we didn't even talk about this on the podcast. And yes, it's kind of a shame, but we didn't notice it until afterwards when I was like editing things. And I was like, wait a second. Josiah was Times Person of the Year 2006? How have I not met this guy before? So if you guys are curious about that, y'all gonna have to look it up yourself because it's totally true. I thought it was super creative. It's totally super true.
On that note, just talk to Mr. Google and then come along on a ride with us, with Josiah.
And we'll take you to Baja, to Bisbee, Arizona, to
Bisbee, Arizona.
Naturita. Naturita? How do you say that? In Colorado? It's like a small little community in Colorado.
I mean, and I've lived in Colorado like most of my adult life, most of my child life and my adult life. And I have no freaking clue where that is or even how to say it.
That's okay. Now you're just going to have to get in a caravan and go there because that's what that one is called, the caravan. Josiah is a part of the Journal of Lost Time and he puts on all these events for van lifers. Even if you're a pretend or wannabe van lifer like we are in our RV, it's still a ton of fun and you're all still welcome to go. But the conversation... I mean, it's about the events and how he does all that and kind of where he got those ideas from. But it's also kind of about advocacy and creating a space for locals and travelers alike where everybody is kind of respectful of each other because they all want to enjoy all of these beautiful places that we are either living in as a local or living in temporarily as a van lifer. And so I think it's pretty cool. He matches up a lot with what we're trying to do with our event, Camp Carpe Diem. So it's kind of cool. It's really cool to talk to him.
Yeah, totally, because, I mean, that's been our thing from day one, is just we like to explore new places, but even more so than the places, it's the people.
Even the people who like Miller High Life, like Josiah. Because sometimes, and like you said this in the podcast, Kenny, there's a beer in a place. Wait, there's a place for any kind of beer. There's a beer for a place. Yeah, it's all that stuff. It all intertwines together.
There's a place where beer fits. And sometimes that place is a trash can. And sometimes that place is in your belly.
The trash can is after you're finishing the beer. And actually, it's a recycling bin.
Wait, that sounds like a long night and a bad night. Sounds like it went south really fast somewhere.
Wait, that goes into what he said later, too, and you guys will see this. Can I interrupt you? I'm sorry.
You can totally interrupt me because I don't know where it's going. You look really excited, too.
That goes into, you'll have to listen to this, too, when he goes into talking about Anthony Bourdain and the Mumford and Son bullshit beers. I don't know what that was. Because, like, I love Anthony Bourdain, and he's had some really intriguing and interesting quotes. But this one I hadn't heard. So, you know, Google is our friend. So I also went and looked that up. So I'm going to read this to you, okay? So Bourdain is definitely, like, this world-renowned traveler and chef, and he loves to drink with locals. He did, unfortunately. That's a whole tragic thing that he's now gone from our world. But when he was traveling and doing all these TV shows and just writing the books and stuff, he was never really a big fan of analyzing beer. It was more like just drinking it and enjoying it and enjoying the buzz and having fun. So this is kind of one of the quotes that he said. He says, "You know, I haven't made the effort to walk down the street 10 blocks to the microbrewery where they're making some fucking Mumford & Sons IPA. People get all bent up about it. But look, I like cold beer and I like to have a good time." So, hey.
You know, I still would have liked to have met Anthony Bourdain, even though he was kind of an asshole at times.
Well, he was proud of that, too. And sometimes that's like, kind of
He shot down my beer.
But you've had a Mumford & Sons IPA?
I actually can't say that I have.
Okay.
But he kind of called me out as a beer snob.
You are a beer
snob? Well, I am, self-admittedly.
And that's exactly why he was great, because he called people out for what they were.
That's true.
And you know what? In a way, I have to go with this. Josiah kind of does the same thing. He's just the real down-to-earth... Like, he's a kick. To know him too much or hang out with him too much, because when we were at his first event, well, our first event that we knew of with him, Escobar a la Baja, like, he's busy in the middle of running an event, so, and having fun.
But, you know, the funny thing with Josiah, though, is, like, we were in the area of Escobar, like several days before the event and after and everything. And even though he's in the midst of planning and getting this event going and everything, like, we still ended up running into him on the street in La Paz and hanging out with him a little bit before the event, even though, you know, when we didn't even know we were running into him, and then we did and found out who he was, and it's like, oh, okay, hey, we're coming to your event, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, he's just a cool guy that's really involved in whatever community he's in and trying to make cool things happen for both the people that are coming to his event and the local people that can maybe benefit from some, you know, having their community have a light shined on it, I guess. It's kind of cool.
Kind of a cool way to put that. I like that. Okay. I like that.
And the coolest thing for me, though, is like getting to know Josiah a little bit was just how genuine he is about it. Like, these are just places he's gone and loves and had a good time and saw other people having a good time and wanted to make it just, you know, a little more intentional of bringing people to this place that he loved and somebody else loved. It's like, he's like, oh, there's a lot of van lifers coming here. There should be a few more. Or this is like a really cool, weird place that I think these friends of mine would love. And they're like, okay, let's invite a bunch of friends. And then it became a thing. It's an event. But it's just out of that love for places and the people in those places and letting other people see those and enjoy them too. So it's kind of cool. I like it. I like the vibe of that.
So the next one coming up is the Weird Wild West in Bisbee, Arizona, on April 18th through the 21st. So that's the next one that's coming up, and he's got several after that, too. So check it out. You can find everything on the Journal of Lost Time /events, and all that will be in the show notes, too. But in the meantime, maybe we should let Josiah talk and tell us his story, including a story that Kenny loved to ask about, his white hat.
His hat. Oh, yes. You gotta know. Like, there's just certain things you gotta know.
But before we get into the interview, it's one thing you have to do. Several things you have to do. Just make sure you subscribe, tell a friend about us, buy us a beer. All those buttons and things are on the show notes. Because, you know, this is fun and we want to keep doing it. So, and we can't keep doing it without you guys.
Well, and even if you don't do all the things, just do one of them.
Yeah.
Just do one.
Yeah, just one.
Not sure which one to tell you what to do, but just you pick. You pick. You make good choices.
And the first good choice is to continue listening, and here's Josiah.
Let's do this.
Ready, right. Marks? Get set, go. Welcome to the Craft Beer Travel and Adventure Podcast. We're here with Josiah. Josiah, what's your last name? Roe?
Roe, R-O-E. Yeah. Yep.
Like, I do know you, but I don't know you extremely well. I'm like, we hung out a little bit in La Paz and Baja California Sur, so we're definitely going to be talking about Baja a little bit. But you also do a lot of shit. Like, you run a ton of events, and they're cool.
Well, yeah, but for the people that can't see this podcast, because we don't do it
video. What's with the cowboy hat?
Oh, we want to start there.
The cowboy hat was really a practical consideration from going to Burning Man and wanting something to keep the sun out of my eyes. Literally, it was a practical thing. And I was rolling through Reno, realized I didn't have a hat on my second burn, had stopped at this dive bar where we were sort of rallying up to meet with the caravan to go in. Next door was a Western wear, like just classic Western wear cowboy shop. And I went in there and met the owner, this guy named Sam, and just like right out of a movie. And I was explaining what I was looking for and found sort of like the classic, you know, Norteño straw white cowboy hat. And since then, it's been my traveling hat, and I tend to get a new one every time I go to Burning Man. I stop in the shop and he like shapes it, and we've since become, you know, at least somewhat passingly familiar with each other. And we say hi and catch up and ask him how the grandkids are doing, sort of situation. But yeah, that's sort of how the white hat came to be. And I've sort of hung on to it despite some inclement political associations one wearing a hat might have this hat, this wearing a hat like this might have, depending on going. But yeah, I like it. It's just a convenient thing. And especially now that I have embraced my middle agedness of shaving my head and just going bald, it works out even more from a shade standpoint. Sunburned on my thumb like head. Yeah, that's sort of become the thing, and it's a running joke. And the team this year decided that to indicate that they were volunteering the Escapar crew, that they would all wear white hats too. And yeah, I mean, we don't do it at every event for sure, but yeah, it's become a little bit part of the, for better or worse, the personal branding.
Nice.
So you mentioned Escapar, which we'll get into, but you, like we said earlier, you do these events. So kind of maybe tell us more about like your company and what your events are and who they're for and like the purpose and the goal behind them.
Yeah, the events came to be somewhat organically while we were, which is kind of my day job, doing photo and video production on behalf of brands and tourism boards, destination marketing organizations, like your Visit California, your Visit Baja California store. We were down shooting a project in Baja. This was my second or third winter down, sort of before the rise of van life, before the explosion of it during the pandemic. And we would run into other overlanders, a lot of them from around the world doing the Pan American, and said, hey, why don't we all meet in a few weeks on this beach outside of La Paz, Playa Tecolote, which I knew was like the city beach and had a lot of space, and there are a couple restaurants there. And just through word of mouth that first year, a good 40 vehicles showed up. And through that, realized that, and this is a little bit just from my, what I studied in college and just some personal reading, being a little bit of a amateur fanboy of urban design and urban planning, the loss and decline of those things called third spaces in our country and in other parts of the world, the neighborhood bar, the corner park, churches, bowling alleys, where you have a mix of socioeconomic diversity, but you also get to meet your neighbors and you get to create social capital and connections that aren't based on purely commerce like you do in the workplace or sort of sitting there at home on the internet. That coupled with the pandemic and the way it divided us even more, and of course choosing a somewhat nomadic lifestyle, being fans of vehicular-based travel and exploration and even living now with van life, sort of saw that there was this humans have souls, this deep need in us to connect and to be with other humans, saw that there was that need, and decided to do more than just one of these events, but to do others in places that I and some others felt were some of our favorite places to quote unquote do van life. And there were sort of little corners of the world that were very van life and nomad friendly. And that quickly led to doing five others, of which one of them is a women only event. Because the majority of our team are women, and they were like, hey, we want a space for us to do our own thing and not have some of the traditional male, I'm going to call it, energy, vibes, etc. That wasn't a concept that was unfamiliar to me as someone who grew up with all sisters and nine aunts. The idea of women wanting their own space, and my dad and I would duck out and, you know, go see Die Hard or the latest Star Wars or something like that. My nephew came along, the three of us would do it, and still do it. So maybe it's almost like a space for just guys. Anyway, it was, so that was not an unfamiliar thing. And so we just decided we were going to do that event. And then we found Tammy Joe, who runs the Outspring, which works to support women-owned businesses. And that team is kind of full speed ahead on that. It's in Southern California, near Temecula, up in the hills at this really beautiful place called Split Rock Farm. The people who own that property are quite lovely. They've really created a space with some really great vibes, and it's awesome. But I'm excited for them and what they've got going on, the programming that they put on there. But all the events tend to be very much integrated with the place where they're held. They're not just for the van lifers who show up. We very much like to be deeply integrated into the local community. So in Baja, there's an entire art section to the event that's all these local artists. There's lots of local bands, even like the local pride groups and the drag groups, lots of local like chefs and restaurants doing cool stuff. So we really try to have it be as mashup-y, as together-ish as we can at each of the spots that we do it. Even in really remote places like our October event, which we do in New Mexico, in Rayma, New Mexico, which is about 2 hours west of Albuquerque in a dark sky area next to El Moro National Monument. It's surrounded mostly by Diné, or like Navajo land. But we get like the local Navajo historians there. We do a big fundraiser for like the local school district. We get like the local ecologist and the National Park Service, etc. So it's like a really interesting way to sort of help us travel with greater awareness and understanding of the people and the place that we're visiting and calling our home for a short period of time. And I like to try to make the argument that a lot of van lifers and overlanders are like a free public works department for wherever we're staying at that time. And so at each one of our events, there's definitely an advocacy angle to it all, where we're doing like big beach cleanups like we do here in Baja. I want to be careful how I word this, because I think the approach, attitude, mindset that we have towards the homelessness epidemic in our country is reprehensible on a moral level. And I want to be careful that when I say that, like, van lifers aren't people that are making a mess of anything, I don't say that as a way to, like, in any way dog on some of the sad images we see of like certain alleyways and under overpasses, like San Francisco, where I'm from. Like, I want to, and I try to have nothing but empathy for the situation and the context and the structural mistakes that we've put into place as a society that feeds that sort of inequality. But I want also there people to have an understanding that when you see somebody roll up in a van and post up for a bit, that like, we really care about where we're at. Like, we treat that like it's our home. Like, we're not making a mess and leaving garbage everywhere. Like, I saw a wonderful video come out from some folks that I only really know in passing, I've met once, where they're just in Arizona right now, and they saw that it was kind of messy out on BLM land, and they went and got 30 other van lifers in that area and just did a massive cleanup of like tires and all sorts of stuff just because they were there. And that just makes me feel joy and proud of them. And I salute them and I think they're awesome. And I feel like that's way baked into like us as a community. And we need to be celebrating that kind of stuff. We also need to talk about the fact that we're doing it. And so we try to do that with our events. It's like, we really connect with, like in Baja, there's a couple of different beach cleanup organizations, including the government agency responsible for the beaches, which is woefully understaffed because, you know, they just have limited resources. And suddenly we show up and we're just cleaning the hell out of that beach and cleaning up all these other beaches around Baja and like encouraging everyone to do that. And that makes me feel really happy. And I think that does a good job. Cause what's the saying of the last free place in America is a parking spot. Like I think it's wrong that there are no overnight parking signs in certain neighborhoods. Like I find that like, it's an attack on my community. And I wish there was a nonprofit that sued the hell out of those municipalities to do that. That's the next chapter of my life. I definitely think back on when I was a kid in high school and we had our local swimming hole on the Bear River. And I know there were times that I left like cans or something like that on that. Like, and those, and fortunately though, like I had, my parents were obsessive about not littering and not like don't throw your banana peel out the thing, which I look back now and I tip my hat to them. But it's always when you take a place for granted, I think, that you're willing to do something like that. And I see it, and it's not exclusive to Baja. Like you see it at state parks, you see it at on BLM land, you see it everywhere, places where you just, people don't give a shit. And they don't know better, or they're choosing not to care, or they just take it for granted. And I don't mind yelling loudly about it. Like I don't give a shit if you think I'm cool for doing it or not. I'm yelling about it because I think it's something that we should care about. Like I'm profoundly uncool, but I still think we need to pick up our garbage.
Like, it's funny because it's cool.
I'm just not cool. Like, I'm all right with that.
Once you make it a habit, it's not a big thing to do, you know, to clean up after yourself. And then like we always make the mantra of and do just a little bit more. You know?
Literally. You got the bag out, grab a couple other pieces. Yeah. You don't have to do it all. Like,
right.
You know, like let's just chip away at it. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's the kind of advocacy angle with that. I want folks to feel like when van lifers roll into town, that it's good for business. It's definitely been a joy to, I mean, we are a transient community. Most folks don't do this as long as some of us have. Like, even though I'm not a full-time van lifer at all, it's definitely very strange to have been doing it for 7-8 years now, almost. Like that's, you know, unless you're part of the Rubber Tramp Rendezvous crew, that makes me, you know, positively a retiree effectively in this community at this point. But I do like that people will visit some of these places and put down some roots. Like there's been several friends who've come to our Bisbee event that now live there and they help out with the event when we roll in, and I'm stoked to see them. We had some folks buy a building in Toledo, Oregon, and have created they renovated this hotel/hostel/van camp because they have this interesting multi-layered parking garage that they can kind of do it, which is interesting to think about a parking garage being turned into like a van thing, but it's pretty dope. I mean, it'll be dope when it's done. But yeah, I enjoy that. I enjoy that.
I'm going to take that maybe as a sign. Not to get into too much detail, but that's what we're kind of like. We've been on the road for 6 years. I cannot believe it's been 6 years full time. Right? And we're playing the game, you know, we've been playing the game. Could we settle here? Could we settle here? And one of the places that we really love is Salida, Colorado. And there's some property that is just like, we could do exactly what you were just talking about. It could be this weird little like hodgepodge of all, how do you get your travelers together, but also stay for a little bit. And it's just exciting to think about that little, next chapter. And that's
where the world is blown up. That's a good spot.
But that's what these events are like. You are like you do, and like what we're doing with Camp Carpe Diem are like for is to build that community, and not to build a community and then like say see ya. It's to build a community that sticks around, that becomes your friends. So when we first started traveling, it was like, oh, these are our friends and these are our road friends. Not that anymore.
No, it's all blends together.
It's all friends.
And relaxation is just as important as community and friendship. So picture this. You're nestled in a hammock, gently swaying under the open sky with nothing but the sound of nature to accompany you. That's the magic of hammockuniverse.com. Relaxation knows no boundaries. Their hammocks aren't just pieces of furniture. They're getaways to tranquility. So whether you're lounging in your backyard oasis or exploring the great outdoors with us, the hammocks at Hammock Universe provide the perfect escape from the stresses of everyday life. Believe me, we know. We've used them. They're awesome. And they're made well, too. Crafted with precision and care. They're meant for comfort and durability. And here's something special for you listeners. Thank you for listening. Use promo code CCD2024 at checkout at hammockuniverse.com and you'll get an extra 15% off on the hammock of your choice. The hammock of your dreams. We hope you now take this moment to grab a beer, listen to the rest of the podcast with Josiah, and then when done, head on over to hammockuniverse.com. Again, use code CCD2024 and get that hammock. You know you want one.
Well, tell me more about the Camp Carpe Diem. Like, I'm curious that what was the impetus behind that? Like, what kicked it off for you guys?
I mean, it really came from our time during COVID, really. that first summer in 2020.
Yeah.
Well, when everything started shutting down, we were with a group of other travelers in one location, had been hanging out for a couple of weeks together already. And then everything started shutting down and everybody going to their bubbles. But there was a small bit of us that were like, you know, we're going to hang out together. We've been together for 2 weeks already. And if anything's going to happen, it was going to happen. So
yeah.
So we kept traveling together and we were usually off by ourselves most of the time, but it was a small group of us. And we realized how important that community was, to make it through times. Because we talked to so many other people that did have to lock away or chose to lock away in their apartment or their home or whatever, and didn't have a lot of social interaction. And especially after they came out of that, it was so obvious how bad that was for people's health.
So, I mean, basically it started because we were sitting around a campfire with a group of people that we really enjoyed the company with. Started around a beer, because, you know, all good ideas start around a good beer and a campfire. And we talked about this, this idea of, like, what would happen if we started a camp that was for adults, that was for fun. Like, just centered around fun. So, like, what would actually happen to build community around it? Yeah, to build community on the road, because some people are lonely on the road. Sure. And it's a lonely existence if you don't reach out and find it. It can be. So we just started talking about it. And then all of a sudden, I really don't remember what the first step was, but it started. And then the four of us, it's us and another couple.
Yeah, yeah.
With the four of us were like, oh shit, we actually started this.
Did I read correctly that it's the fourth year?
Yeah. Yes.
That's great. That's super cool.
And yeah, that's around. We move our event around every year to a different
location. So it's not in Arkansas every year?
No.
This is the first time in Arkansas.
So okay, that's why I was so confused when you said it. I'm like, I feel like I know this event. Yeah, good.
Well, we wanted to do it. We want to bring travelers together of a community, but they're traveling. So we want to hold it in different spots because we also want to bring, like you, awareness to the local area and, like, get out there and enjoy the shit. Our viewers who are not retired are really, really good at working on the road because they hone themselves inside and work away and forget where they are. And that's another piece of it too. And, like, what you do is get out there and find the community and find the people and enjoy the local goods. Cause that's, you know, we brew a beer with the local brewery every time for our event too. And it's just the fun of bringing the traveling community with the local community and realizing we can all work together to.
Yeah. I've never explored that corner of Arkansas. Like, I had a lot of family passed away. So I've got one aunt and an uncle left in Flippin, Arkansas, up near Bull Shoals and Mountain Home. That's like near the border of Missouri. But anyway, I've never gone down because it's in Hot Springs, right? Or near Hot Springs.
Yeah, Hot Springs National Park this year.
Yeah. Super cool. Yeah, I've never mucked around in that corner of the U.S. Interesting. And you're doing it in May? That'll be a great time of year too.
Yeah,
the weather's supposed to be beautiful that time and the flowers blooming. And
yeah, that'll be good.
Lots of good bike riding to do. Oh, lots of good beer to drink.
So how did you come up with like your events and where they're located and how do you, because you have a lot going on, so how do you decide that and who should go to those?
Well, they're all in places that were very van friendly. It was very organic. So we had done a project for Visit Tucson. They're a great client, and their marketing director Lee was like, hey, you, what are you doing after this project? I'm like, I'm not sure. Like, I think I'm gonna, you know, stay down south for a minute and explore parts of Arizona. And he's like, well, you need to go check out this town called Bisbee. And I'm rolling into Bisbee, and just by just geeking out online at the local shops and hotels, I saw this hotel called the Jonquil. And I just sent him a DM. I'm like, hey, look, I work for this travel magazine. I'm rolling into town. I've got a van, blah, blah, blah. And they hit me back right away. And the owners were burners, like go to Burning Man. Ava for Overland Expo, she's like their MC. We were just chatting this morning. We immediately hit it off. She's like, fuck that, park behind my hotel. And like, I just ended up staying there for like 3 weeks. We got to be really good friends. She and her husband and I, Sterling, they're big adventure motors. So she's about to go do a 10-day ride on the whatever backcountry discovery trail. But yeah, we just kind of hit it off. Super rad. We go to Burning Man. We do all this fun stuff. We're like, hey, we should do an event here. I'm like, I got this Baja event. Why don't we do one in Bisbee? And it was sort of all this like timing of like, yeah, I'm going to do one in Bisbee. There was this, we did do one in this little town that I'd also come across that I loved called Lander, Wyoming, up on the east side of the Wind River Range. We used to do one called the Wind River Rally, and it's an incredible part of the world. It's so beautiful. It's absolutely awesome to visit. Their city park is like, it should be a model for how towns should embrace van lifers and the rest. The problem is we were doing it in early June, and that time of year, it can still be at that elevation, rainy and almost snowy. And also like, a lot of our community just hasn't yet migrated that far north yet. And you're talking, it's a long drive from like the Front Range and Salt Lake City and the rest to kind of pull for those markets. And then I had met through some friends in Moab and helped do this event back in May, about an hour west of Telluride, a little town called Naturita. And the property is amazing. And so we've moved our Wyoming event this June down to that property, and we're calling it the Caravan. And that's going to have space for like a good, and it's just like, it connects right into mountain biking trails. It's on a river. It's on a lake. There's cabins, there's glamping tents, there's RV sites. There's tons of van camping, tons of awesome artwork, like LED flowers lit up at night that are like, you know, 20 feet tall, and there's just a bunch of burners. And yeah, it's just this really, really incredible location. And so, our June event's there. I found our July event is out on the Oregon coast because you want to escape the heat and go to the coast, because, you know, with all the crazy heat waves we've had the last 3 years, it's kind of perfect. I came across that location doing a project for Oregon Coast Visitor Association, their tourism board, like effectively Travel Oregon. Their marketing director was like, hey, come check out this weird little town on the estuary. And it was an old mill town with like an oyster farm in it that had this beautiful green right there on the water. I was like, I'm going to throw an event in this town. And they were, of course, stoked to have us because there's nothing in the town but a dispensary, two bars, and a pizzeria. Oh, and a bowling alley and a few other things, a couple of little coffee shops. But yeah, they have a blast with us there. Although we're going to move it to a different spot about 10 miles away just because we need more space because it sells out. And Travel Oregon uses that event to kick off a project they call Oregon Seafair. And it's a big local seafood, sustainable seafood and agricultural initiative they have. And so we bring in a ton of like chefs and farmers and literally oysters and halibut and the rest right off the boat, and then get both van lifey, nomad-y overlanding chefs like Jason at Overland Cookery or AJ at Bus Life Kitchen. They make a bunch of awesome food with it, but then we get in local chefs and restaurants around Oregon and the rest. And Travel Oregon has a big converted Airstream kitchen that they use to sort of go around to various events to the seafood that you can buy, seafood and agriculture you can buy from the coast that's sustainable. So it's great for us as like van lifers and overlanders, because we get to roll in and just eat like kings and queens for a weekend, which is pretty dope. that's sort of a big cultural part of that event. It takes on a very food oriented thing, even though there's live music and stand-up comedy and all that sort of fun stuff. That's sort of how we're very integrated with the local community there. It's sort of through the food thing for that event. And then fast forward to October is our last event of the year. It's called Moon Landing. I did not come up with that name. A good friend named Henry, who is the CEO and founder of Moon Fabrications that makes the shades for vans and RVs. Yeah. Yep. Henry was like, hey, man, I love your events. I found this location. It's in New Mexico. I was going to do it in Moab. He's like, I found this location. The property owners are awesome and interesting and weird. It's in the middle of nowhere, but it's incredibly beautiful. And I have a name for the event. I want to call it Moon Landing. And when he gave me the name, I was just sold because I'm like, what a fucking great name. Moon Landing. And we were joking about yesterday. We were on the phone yesterday just catching up. And I was like, yeah, I was sold at that. So he basically gave me the name. And I make them like title sponsors in perpetuity because he found the location and the name. And it's, so it's like a homie thing. Even though it's, you know, it's our event. But yeah, he's just a good dude and a good friend. And so, and you know, the Moon crew always rolls in and they have a good time and they've got their, but it's beautiful. It's up on a mesa. Because of where it's located, that event tends to have a real science, technology, education aspect to it. Like we get astronomers and geeks up from the New Mexico Air and Space Institute Museum, the observatory outside Tucson. This past year, the solar eclipse went right overhead. So we had a whole solar eclipse viewing part of it. Every night we raise a massive, like 10 foot wide, we have a big helium balloon. One half is painted with the surface of the moon, the other half's black. And inside of it, we hang LED lights. So it's really trippy. And so it's just like, man, that moon looks so close and so big, depending on what level of inebriation and or indulgence in certain substances you might be. Not approving anything. I stay sober at those things. Have to, it's a job. It's trippy though, because you're walking like, man, that moon looks so close. And how's it move? How's it waxing and waning so quickly? But yeah, so we do a big moon raising every night and everyone howls and goes nuts. And yeah, there's live music and the rest. But that's a really fun event. And that one started, you know, just 100 rigs. And last year we had close to 500. And the property owners have been, Amanda and Matt have been just a delight to work with. They keep working on the property, expanding it, making it have even more and more space for us. Cause it's just a lot of land to clear and to prep. And it is the high desert. And but there, it's beautiful. Like when it's, yeah, when you're up there on this mesa, just watching these storms roll through, like late monsoon rains barrel through. Yeah. The first year we did it, the rains were so late and so brutal, it washed out the road into the property. So in 48 hours, you had to basically get a third of a mile road built, which meant like we had like 18 tractor trailers of gravel brought in. It was one of the, yeah, it was wild. And just to find the equipment to make the road, as there's like 150 vans just lined up waiting to get in, you know, like the day, and we're just like, no, we're not going to open till tomorrow. And everybody's just kind of like having fun on the road. It was a trip, man. Just getting that road built.
Oh, wow.
Like, I'm like running around. Like, is this like, as the vans are lining up, racing all over in the middle of nowhere, New Mexico.
So were you having a blast doing that? Or are you like, oh my gosh, what the fuck did I get myself into?
Or both?
It's real Zen state for me. Like I've got like something happens in a crisis where, and I get it from my father, where it's like, I just go into like, yeah, there's a little bit of a thrill, but I'm not fake. I don't rattle. Cause now the events are, they started out with just like I said at the beginning of the call, like 40 of us just hanging out on the beach in Baja. But now there's, you know, when there's 1,000 people, like what responsibility do we have to their safety and well-being? Like we could take a real, like, you know, fuck you, you're on your own sort of attitude, but that feels wrong and not loving and kind, you know? And well, that's not saying I'm responsible for everything, but I'm going to try to, like, with the best of intentions, try to take care of folks to the extent I practically can. And so we talk about that a lot. And yeah, it was, this was the year I felt like we, last year and into this year was the year we really had to grow up and mature as event throwers. And also just on an individual level, you know, like it's like, we talk about it now, like we have shifts. Like if one of us is drinking, which go for it, you're not on duty when that's going down. You know, like we can't have, you know, there's just things like that we didn't think about when it was just a bunch of us sitting around a campfire.
And now you have to do that.
Well, right. Yep. And we, like the first event of yours we attended was Escapar La Baja this year, La Baja.
Yeah, yeah.
We had, I mean, we didn't really know much about your event before we got there. We heard there were going to be a lot of people there, and there were. There were not 40 vans down there. There were probably, I don't know if you got a final count, but it seemed around 500-ish, maybe more.
Yeah, yeah, it was a lot.
But we had heard that, like, in a couple people had some negative thoughts on it from past years. Was that kind of a growing thing where they said, you know, there was a lot of maybe trash on the beach and things like that left afterwards? But was that a growing experience? Because this year, the way everything was run was incredible. There was an organized cleanups. Mm-hmm. You guys brought in portable toilets all over the beach for whoever was camping there, not just Escapar people, whoever was there. You brought in dumpsters this year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of that process you're talking about?
The portable toilets and dumpsters have been there since the third Escapar. So this is the third year, wait, three, four, five. Yeah, this is the third year we had done it. And so I say with absolute confidence and certainty, would put my life on the line, that anyone that said that there was garbage or trash left behind after any Escapar doesn't know what they're talking about and are just straight up making it up. Like if that garbage was there out in the dunes, it's because it was there beforehand and we just like missed it. But people just don't do that. Like it's just not a thing. And we've always done beach cleanups at every one of our events. Even before we had dumpsters out there, we had folks do it. So part of the problem is a tecolote, as somebody who spent lots of time down there. Like if we went out to that beach right now, there's just, especially on a weekend like this, which was just a holiday weekend with locals going out there and the rest, there's just garbage that ends up out there. The hurricane this year washed out a ton of it down in the arroyos and stuff like that. So yeah, the people talking about like online and the rest is just, it's just a lot of like online weird chatter and people on Facebook complaining about stuff. And I take it seriously insofar as like it matters to me from a PR standpoint that we do a better job talking about the stuff that we do to really keep the beach clean. But it's more like I want people to know about like Mar Libre and Clean BCS, which are two great nonprofits that are doing beach cleanups year round down here. Like they need support beyond just our one event cleaning up Tecolote that one time a year. Like that beach, it looks better after our event than it did when we got there every year, like period. I know because I go there beforehand. But anyway,
I can say that definitively because we were there probably almost a week before the event even happened. And a lot of people were already showing up. And I know that the people that were there, people that we knew from your crew at Escapar and just people who were attending, were cleaning up the beach before most people even got there for Escapar. They were and which is not from us, that we were cleaning up stuff that was already there. And again, throughout the entire event and after the event,
yeah,
all cleaning up again after the event.
Yeah, that's just our community. Like, it's not like
what we
I'm confident in that, not because of like what we do as an organization. I'm confident in that because it's part of like who we are as a community who has so much joy that we get to call Baja and Playa Tecolote our home for a couple weeks. Like, that's just magic.
Yeah, so we're talking a lot about trash, but I don't want it to make it sound like this whole thing is about that because these are great events. It's a piece that we need to be aware of and stuff.
Yeah.
But these are great events that you guys host and they build this community that is really great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Van-lifers, locals, other travelers, like, you know, we don't live in a van. We said our RV, his name is Rafe. Like we said, you know, Rafe was disguised as a van the whole time we were hanging out there. But it's just a way of bringing people together. And I think that you're doing that and how that came about.
And there were a ton of locals that came out to Escapar for sure. I mean, some just to hang out and enjoy the festival part of it or the community aspect of it. And some that had businesses in town that wanted to show off their stuff. And I mean, it was really cool to see the mix of locals and visitors and semi-residents and whatever. You know, there was such a tremendous blend of people. And
so you have several events coming up this year. Where, like, what are some of the main ones that you have coming up this year, and where can people find out more information about all these? Because we want them to go too. Like,
yeah.
I want to go more now too.
I mean, you can find out everything on journalofloststime.com/events. You'll see a bunch on there. All of ours, plus some other ones that we like. We're not precious or elitist about being willing to support and promote other events that we feel are community centric. First, I'm not into expos. I think I got to be careful saying that, but certain expos are okay. But just going to a big outdoor mini mall is, you know, very American, but not one of the most inspirational things to me. What's made certain expos, I think, particularly memorable and joyous for people have been like the connections they've made and the friendships they've made, mm-hmm. not the fact that they were able to like drop $500 on a new set of toe straps, even though, you know, you need those, but.
well, there's a place for that, but that's a place for that.
Yep. And so we have brands that I'm very, very grateful for their sponsorship and their involvement with our events. But we ask them to act like they're part of the community and to do something creative and participatory. So you get fun stuff like IceCo, which makes freezers and refrigerators, doing an ice cream social at our women only event. So they're rolling in with a bunch of kick-ass big old fridges and freezers giving away ice cream, which who doesn't love ice cream? Yeah, it's just stuff like that. It's really
fun. That's actually that
well, I mean,
for travelers, that's brilliant.
If you think about it, sorry, shameless kind of plug here real quick, but if you think about it, for our presenting sponsor this year is Hammock Universe, and they do the same thing. They come up and we have like this whole chill zone, and we have hammock setups with Hammock Universe, and it's
perfect.
Thing. It's like you're actually a part of the event and enjoying what it is.
Because they love that outdoor space too and want to enjoy it. That's their motive behind their business.
Yeah. So I get it.
Yeah. I just think that's just a much better way to do business anyway. It definitely takes more work with the brands to have those kinds of conversations because they have to like think in a different way as opposed to just checking a box. Okay, we're sending a team to the expo with these generic tables and those stupid, ugly, curved flags that just look like ass. And like every time I see a photo next to a line of these curved flags, I'm just like, you tacky. Like, is that the best you could come up with? Like, what a lack of creativity. I just hate them. Well, I've literally got into it. Like, it's in the contract. No curved flags.
No curve.
Literally. Like, I'm just, fuck no. Like, I barely want to say it's okay to have tables. It's like, get out from behind the tables, shake some hands, get weird, you know, like host a happy hour. Like, it's fun stuff. But yeah. Like even like Van Life Trader, which is all about like doing reselling of vans, like at our caravan event, like they're doing a whole like parade of vans / happy hour thing. And they're just getting goofy and silly with it. Like they love it. Like they're having fun. They're like, this is way better than just a generic boring, and people love it. It gives them something to like go and have fun with. And
it's a much better way to enjoy life, both as working for a business or running a business. And I personally think you build deeper connections with the people you want to use your product.
100%. Yeah. And like, I love it when they send their ambassadors, because then like, I'm not super into the whole influencery thing, but like folks love some of these folks or have been following them. And when, you know, Four Wheel Camper sends one of their ambassadors to one of our events, and you know, folks are lining up to chat with them and geek out on their camper shells and all that stuff. And I think now that we're like also post-pandemic and this van life thing has been around now for 7-8 years longer, depending on where you sort of talk about Class B's and the rest, everyone's thinking about their second or third rig at this point, you know, like Blakely on our team, like she's seriously considering making the jump from, she has a dope ProMaster, but she's like, I think I'm ready for a four-wheel drive vehicle. And I'm looking at the four-wheel camper truck. Like people are at that point now where they're thinking about the next iterate. I am.
We are too.
Like I'm kind of done with I love my Volkswagen, but like, it's like getting kicked in the nuts repeatedly. An owner of that, you know, like Vanagon's, you get there on the second try if you're lucky. Put in and I'm gonna pull out and I'm gonna set out north And it's like, cross your fingers. Like, will I get there?
Plus, it's just that idea of when you've traveled enough to enough places, you kind of get an idea of what you like and what you enjoy. And does the rig you have at that moment get you where you want to go? It's like, I'm close to where I want to go, but I really want to be over there, but just I can't get there with
farther,
this.
Just a little farther.
I need to change this up because I want to be able to get there all the time when I want to, not just get close to it.
Yeah, I think I'm ready to have four-wheel drive and be able to stand up. What it is. Like, and be
headroom,
able to, like,
headroom is not an overrated.
No, it's really not.
It's not.
It's nice.
Yeah. But I mean, I do love my van. It's got, I mean, at the time when I got it, like, your options for your quote unquote van life or overlanding were really limited. Like, there were a few sprinters out there, but like, it was like early ones. It wasn't anything like now. Like, it just, there's no, like, none of these companies existed. There was no Storyteller. There was no outside DM vans. No, like, it was, yeah, it was weird. Like, I was going to early descend on Benz when it was still like 30 of us VW dudes sitting around hole in a rock, you know, like Dave and Ryan, like, they're homies. Like, it turned into a fucking thing. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Big thing.
Wild. Anyway.
Awesome. Anyway. Well, I guess it's time for all of us to like head out and get moving because, you know, we got events to be at.
Yeah. Where are you guys at right now? Promote. Yeah. Where are you guys
we're
at?
We're boring right now.
We're actually in Denver right now. Denver.
Cool.
In his parents' driveway.
Oh, we actually have a bunch of beer related events to be at around.
Oh,
now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, were we supposed to talk about beer too? Like,
I mean, that could be a whole other 3 hours of talking.
Hey,
we're
supposed
to talk about beer.
The podcast is Craft Beer Travel and Adventure. We did that on purpose so we could keep it pretty wide open.
I like it. Well,
beer has been mentioned, so we're good.
Okay, cool. I mean, I'm just a firm believer in the working man, working class. Like, give me a Miller, ice cold Miller High Life and a shot of Fernet.
All right, we have to kill this podcast right now and just end it right there. No.
My partner in the business, Nate, is a former brewer, like, worked in New Belgium, blah, blah, blah. And so, like, we get into these just, he has definitely introduced me to some, I fucking hated pale ales. Like, I used to dog on them. Was it like Anthony Bourdain's quote? You know, it's like those Mumford and Son bullshit beers is what he called pale ales. I've come to appreciate them from time to time. Yeah, they're not too
well
bad.
We have come to appreciate, you know, some beers like, you know, Miller High Life.
Every beer has its place.
Yeah.
It is hot and you just, it's got to be cold because as soon as that thing drops off of ice cold, it is some of the worst thing you can put in your mouth.
We call those types of beers, those are like your best worst beers. Like, they're just so good. But
well, I can't tell you down in Baja how many Tecates or Pacificos or Modelos I drank. So
I love them. They got to have the limes just because,
he doesn't agree, but I agree. Con limon.
See. Yeah, con limon. And a lot of, did you ever get a chilada where it's just like, they'll put like a bunch of lemon or lime juice in the bottom on ice with the beer and salt on the rim?
I would have done that.
Oh, no. We had
magic. Yeah, when they had the clamato in there. I like it without the clamato.
Okay.
And it's like, it's weirdly good.
We were just there. So that's why I have to say that there's this brewery in Poncha Springs, Elevation. Mm-hmm. Brewing, and they have this just fantastic Mexican lager. It's called Tres Amigos, and it's just the perfect mixture of like the salt and the lime, and then it's so good.
And then they'll rim the glass for you in Tajin. So,
I like that. I like that.
In Elevation.
Cool. Yeah, I believe so.
Did they in Tajin? Yeah, because everything con Tajin. Yeah, con limon.
Cool. I hope this was good for you guys.
Thank you so much, Josiah. It was awesome.
All right, talk to you later. Bye.
All right, talk to you later, Josiah.
See. Josiah's a cool dude.
He is.
We got one more thing left to say. And we're going to leave you with a quote. I think it's appropriate. From Anthony Bourdain.
Travel isn't always pretty. It isn't always comfortable. Sometimes it hurts. It even breaks your heart. But that's okay. The journey changes you. And it should change you. It leaves marks on your memory, on your consciousness, on your heart, and on your body. You take something with you. Hopefully, you leave something good behind.
Peace out.
Travel well.
We'd love to hear from you, so keep the conversation going. Send us a note, share a beer recommendation or two, or just say hey. This Stout Conversation has been brought to you by livingastoutlife.com, where you can find community and resources for all your craft beer travel and adventure lifestyle needs.